Thank you for joining us for another episode of Exposing Scientology, where we reveal what really goes on inside this business masquerading as a church. Hey there, everyone. And here we have also joining us, Mr. Mark Headley.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the channel.
Welcome, everyone.
We appreciate everybody who tunes in to watch these. I mean, if you guys stop watching, we'll probably stop doing them. But as long as you keep watching, we'll keep doing them. I figure that's a good deal if we can get it, you know?
Okay. Well, the topic of this discussion today is Tom Cruise and David Beckham. And it was sort of prompted by me watching the new documentary on Netflix called Beckham. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it yet, Mark, you and Claire, but
Claire watched it. She just finished the last, I think it was four episodes. She finished the last episode last night, but I haven't seen it. I don't, I watch too much YouTube. I don't want a lot of Netflix or TV anymore, but it's on my list. It's on my long list.
It's really good and quite interesting, even for someone that kind of knows a lot about him and his history and his activities with Manchester United and the England football team and, you know, Real Madrid and everything. I still learned a great deal, but the fourth episode includes the interaction of him with Tom Cruise and then Will Smith. That's what we want to talk about, because last week, and probably prompted by that show, there was an article that someone sent to me. Tom Cruise reportedly still feels taken advantage of by David and Victoria Beckham from their years-long feud.
That's now, ridiculous.
How Tom Cruise feels taken advantage of is a little hard to grasp, but there is a quote in this article. I'll have this article on my blog and you'll be able to read the whole thing. It's not very long. What was an issue was the pressure to join Scientology, the Beckham pal revealed. Tom wouldn't take no for an answer, unquote. As a result, the athlete and fashion designer felt they had no choice but pull away. But the Cruise insider insists it's clear Tom was hurt by the rejection. Okay.
You know, I just realized something, Mike. I think the only two people that Tom Cruise has gotten into Scientology have gotten out.
Yeah. Yeah. The only two people he has gotten into Scientology are Katie and Nicole.
Yeah.
And he married them.
And they're both SPs. Well, you know, to be fair, he did get his sisters in as well.
Yeah. Okay.
I got to give it to him. He did get the sisters in, but the two people that he wasn't related to that he got in, he was kind of even sort of related to them too. But as soon as he wasn't related to them, they got right out of there.
Right. Now, there is a lot of backstory and a lot of fascinating goings on that surround this whole story.
That most people do not know about.
No, they do not.
Because it all happened when we were both still there.
Right.
2004, 2005 is when a lot of this was going on, right?
Yep.
Remember we did that. We'll go on. Go on with your thing, because I know you got slides that are going to probably tell what I'm going to tell.
No, I don't.
Oh, well, I was going to say in 2004, that's when Tom really turned the corner.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like that 2004 was the, oh, I'm in this now, and I'm going to do big
moment.
Things. Yeah, that, I'm going to do big things.
That was, he had been recovered by Marty after the Eyes Wide Shut incident that occurred, where he and Nicole had basically gone off shooting Eyes Wide Shut in the UK for a year on a very secret closed set and had fallen out of communication with David Miscavige, which caused great, great consternation. And I was involved in that. I went to London to try and find out what was going on. I cover a lot of this stuff in my book, but I wanted to sort of put it all together in the context of David Beckham, because in the book, it's really in the context just of Tom and what was going on with him. At 2004 was a sort of a watershed year because 2004, well, let me go back. In 2001, Tom divorced Nicole.
Yeah.
And then he shot a movie, Vanilla Sky, with Penelope Cruz. And Penelope then became his girlfriend.
Which is how he became the girlfriend with Nicole when he shot Days of Thunder.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Penelope was accepting of Scientology, but not
enthusiastic.
Not enthusiastically jumping in. I met her a few times. She is one of the nicest, sweetest, kindest, and most stunningly beautiful people you could ever possibly meet. But she came from Madrid, and her sister was a newscaster on a major TV, like Nightly News in Madrid. And the effort was to get the whole family into Scientology, and particularly to get them onto the purification program.
Yeah, I remember in manufacturing, we got Spanish Castilian lectures rounded up to send to get and brought those up to Religious Technology Center so that those could be sent out.
Right. As with the Ideal Org in New York, the Ideal Org in Madrid took on great significance because this was the home of Penelope, the biggest star in Spain, and her sister, the biggest TV, one of the big TV personalities in Spain. So the idea was, if these guys are in Scientology, then we will take over Spain. Spain will become the first clear country, not Mexico. Yeah.
And I think the Madrid, Spain, this the Madrid Ideal Org, I think was the very first one opened, right?
No.
Oh, Buffalo. It was after Buffalo. But Buffalo was just kind of like a
Buffalo
weird...
and then San Francisco.
Yeah, but they were
and then Madrid, then Joburg, and then Madrid and New York. And you know, the other ones have different reasons for them. Madrid was greatly influenced by the fact that Tom Cruise was dating Penelope Cruz.
Yeah.
So the opening of the Madrid org was in September of 2004, the opening of the new Ideal Org premises. And Tom Cruise famously showed up to participate in that opening. Here you can see him speaking. Yeah. And he actually delivered his speech in Spanish.
Yeah, and didn't he also jump up on the stage?
Oh, yeah, he jumped.
Instead of going around the stairs, he jumped. He
leaped up onto the stage with his sunglasses on and then did the big dramatic reveal of his steely blue eyes or whatever color they are.
Yeah, it was super weird. It was the beginning of Crazy Tom Cruise.
It was the beginning of Crazy Tom Cruise. It was very strange because by that point, Penelope had broken up with him. By the time the org opened,
that's right,
Penelope had actually broken up with him.
Yeah, she was gone. She gone.
Although her sister and her mother and father, I think, attended the opening. They did attend the opening.
Wow.
But this this opening event was an interesting experience because immediately following that, I happened to be standing with Tom and his sister, Leanne, who was his public relations person at the time.
Yeah, it was Leanne DeVette at the time, right?
Right, yeah. After he had fired Pat Kingsley for telling him and going along with Paramount to stop talking about Scientology. Okay, that's a whole nother story also in my book. And this next story is also in my book in some considerably more detail, but Tom looks over to me and says, "Can you believe Leanne cannot find a girlfriend for me?" And I was like, "What?"
I didn't even know what to say. His sister is a horrible pimp.
Yeah, madam.
Madam.
Leanne sucks at being a madam.
Yeah, or a setup artist.
I mean, it was the most bizarre thing. And at that moment, Miscavige walked into the room and said, "What are you guys talking about?" And Tom says, "Well," and he explains, "Okay, subsequent to that is the story of Nazanin Boniadi, who became Tom Cruise's girlfriend. There is an extensive article about that in Vanity Fair that goes into all the details, but it was the beginning of this effort to find a girlfriend for Tom Cruise. And when Naz didn't work out, he eventually ended up with Katie Holmes. I wasn't there when that happened, so I have no idea how that all went down. But we, Mark and I, both know that there were interviews being done at Celebrity Center constantly by Greg Wilhere and other people to find suitable paramours for Tom Cruise because he couldn't find them for himself.
And it was being done under the guise of an audition.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very, it was being very, it was being portrayed as, we want to audition you for a Tom Cruise project. And then they would interview the female actress, and they would just ask them a lot of questions about themselves. And then they would also ask them where they were on the Scientology bridge and what were their thoughts about Tom Cruise and what were their thoughts about David Miscavige. And then those interviews, /auditions, were then being edited at Golden Era Productions into reels, and they would be vetted by between Greg and Darius Wilhere was Greg's son, who worked in the talent. He was over the talent department of Golden Era Productions, so he was the one cutting the videos together. And even I, when I saw them, I'm like, what are we doing? We're now casting for Tom Cruise's movies? And Darius is like, no, it's a project for RTC. And then even the only way I knew what it was is I mentioned to Claire. I said, yeah, we were doing these weird auditions for some movie or something. And Claire goes, oh, that ain't for a movie. That's for Tom Cruise to be his girlfriend. And I was like, what? You got my guys? Because I was pissed. I was like, you got my people working on finding Tom Cruise a girlfriend? We got better shit to do, you know? This is a bunch of bullshit. I'm cutting together Final Cut reels for Tom Cruise's girlfriend reel.
Right. Well, you know, it got weird. It really did. We had from that opening in September, we went straight to St. Hill. From the Madrid opening in September, we went straight to St. Hill and did the IAS event. And that is the event where Tom Cruise got presented the Freedom Medal of Valor. And here the a still from that video of him and Dave with the steely-eyed glare salute. Short Tom and even shorter Dave.
And they did their shake off too. Like when he got up there, they do that bromance shake off. Like, no, I got a bigger grip. I got a heavier grip. I got a heavier grip. No, I got a double hander shake. No, I got a double hander shake too. Now we got a bro hug out.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
And apart from the fact that in this event, Tom Cruise claimed that David Miscavige was the greatest man on earth, and he had met the leader of leaders. And Dave was the leader of leaders. On the other side of the equation, the video, which is the infamous black turtleneck video, which I will also put up, but the video about Tom Cruise is like the over-the-top butt-kissing about how he is the greatest disseminator in the history of Scientology.
He's introduced Scientology to billions of people.
Billions.
Over literally a billion people.
And so because he had done so much to disseminate Scientology and gotten so many people into Scientology, he was given the Flavor Flav version of the IAS Freedom Medal. It's, you know, like this big, everybody else's is this big, and it's got like diamonds and rubies and emeralds and all sorts of shit all over it, and there's only ever been one and there only ever will be one. It was a moment where it was actually a moment where a lot of Scientologists got very pissed off. A lot of Sea Org members got very pissed off. Like,
yeah, he said the most dedicated Scientologist I know, we're like, bitch, I've been here 14 years and I'm giving you 120 hours a week for chump change. And this dude that just showed up is the most dedicated Scientologist. He literally just showed up.
Right. He hadn't been doing diddly squat.
He hadn't done anything since, I mean, he audited me in the 1990s and then just disappeared. We never heard from him. And it was like, oh, he was a scientist. We all knew he was a Scientologist, but he wasn't telling anybody about it.
Right. Exactly. But, and this sort of goes to the point of Tom Cruise, the greatest disseminator in the history of Scientology, had been involved with the biggest names in Hollywood for many, many years. He had already done, I guess he'd already done two movies with Steven Spielberg by then.
Well, he did Minority Report. I don't know that he had done World of Worlds at that point.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That came in 2004, 2005-ish.
Yeah, you're right. Yep, you're right.
But either way,
was 2004 and 5. But he had done movies with Steven Spielberg. He did Far and Away with Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And there was a huge effort to get Ron Howard into Scientology. Ron Howard was brought to the Gold Base and wined and dined. And then I was sent to L.A. to meet with his partner, Brian Grazer, to disseminate Scientology to him. Cruise had been with all sorts of, you know, from Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man to, you know, like almost everybody who was a big star. Cameron Diaz and
Jack Nicholson
and all sorts of people. And he had never disseminated to anyone. He had never gotten anybody into Scientology.
Except for his wife. Nicole and Penelope-ish.
Yeah.
And Katie-ish.
Well, yeah.
Katie was writing Knowledge Report, so she was in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. She was in. And so was Nicole. I mean, yeah. Nicole was on her OT levels.
Yeah.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Not so much Penelope. Penelope never really took the bait and never really participated.
I bet you those compact discs we sent her are still in the shrink wrap. As most Scientologists who have those are, they're still in the shrink wrap.
Exactly.
You can buy them on eBay used, and they're still in the original shrink wrap.
Exactly. Like the big box, the outside box is still shrink wrap. Inside is also still shrink wrap.
Yeah.
Everything's still shrink wrapped.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there was a big, big effort to get David Beckham and Victoria into Scientology. And Tom Cruise was sort of given the job. And when you watch this documentary about Beckham, you'll understand why. To people in the United States, it's not very understood just how transcendent football is outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
And how fanatic people are. And, you know, David and Victoria Beckham were probably the most recognizable people on earth. They even talk in the documentary about the Sun newspaper in the U.K. sending reporters all over the world to find anybody that didn't know David Beckham. And they finally found one man, and he was a sheep herder in Chad.
Wow. That's wild.
So they were incredibly, incredibly well known, and it would have been the coup of all time to have managed to get them into Scientology and then promoting the fact that they were in Scientology.
Yeah.
You see in the documentary, Cruise showing up. David Beckham got transferred from Manchester United to Real Madrid. Conveniently, another Madrid connection. And you see in the documentary, Cruise showing up to watch the game, Real Madrid game, with Victoria.
Yeah.
And it's like the big schmooze.
Yeah.
And this was, it sort of culminated in, after his tenure in Real Madrid from 2003 to 2007, He went and signed, David Beckham went and signed with the LA Galaxy of Major League Soccer.
Before you talk about that, though.
Yeah.
When, right before I left in January of 2005. Right before I left, I was the one who set up all of the networking and fiber and a bunch of other stuff at the international headquarters of Scientology. And so I was just perusing through Dave's personal photo server. And there was a ton of pics of Dave and Larice and Tom and the Beckhams and in like a, like private boxes or at the, you know, at a match or something like that. So they were, Dave had also participated in some of these little schmooze fests that was going on there because it was, there was pictures of him at, in the stadium.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just Tom. It was a tag team.
I know.
They were both trying to get him.
Yep. They were exactly.
Anyway, okay. So then he gets, so then fast forward to 2007-ish?
Seven. You see in the documentary that when the Beckhams came to Los Angeles, they were feted with a party, a welcome party hosted by Tom Cruise and Will Smith. Smith.
Tom's other failed recruit.
Yeah, exactly. Although Will Smith got a little further than some of the others because
they started that school,
open that school out in Calabasas,
a Scientology, a school that used Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard's study technology, as he calls it,
right,
to look up words in a dictionary and make shit out of clay and don't do things that are out of gradient.
Right. Okay. So let me just tell you something else that happened. And I'm going to show you this picture, but I mentioned that Ron Howard was brought to the Int base to try and schmooze him. Well, there was a a soccer pitch made at the Int base.
And a professional one.
I don't mean just a bit of dirt with two goals, one at each end at the right distance. No, a fully laid out, irrigated with sprinklers and special grass and the
special mower
with a special mower and a single person assigned to care for it.
The sports fields IC.
The sports fields IC.
In charge.
This was done so that David Beckham would have a soccer pitch to go run around on when Tom managed to persuade him, or Tom and Dave managed to persuade him to come to the Int base. And it was like a sales pitch.
Yeah, like look what we got.
Okay.
You want to put it up?
Yeah. Okay, this, down here in the bottom right-hand corner, you can't see it very well, but I've got an arrow there. This was the only photo that I could find that sort of showed it in any fashion. But you can see that this grass on the soccer pitch
where the arrow is.
Where the arrow is the perfect green grass. Everywhere else is just the grass that grows and it's sort of mowed by a, like a tractor.
Yeah.
And it's got those tractor, you know, mowing.
Quick and dirty. Lines. It's like an X-Wing fighter where the things land exactly. down and it. But, and,
but yeah. this soccer pitch was like, nope, it was perfection. It was the, it looked like if you went to a professional soccer game in England or in Madrid or whatever, what that soccer pitch would look like.
Yeah, and no one ever played soccer on it.
No one ever used it. Because it was reserved for only David Beckham. But David Beckham never showed up. Now, I also have a circle above that on that photo.
Oh, yeah.
And
I remember that circle well.
Yeah, me too. That is what used to be the original running program track. And
which the only place they have that now, because they disbanded it at the Int base, the only place they still have one of those is in Clearwater, in that big building down, that big brand new building they built down in Clearwater.
Right.
Now, and that's for the running program. What do they call it? Don't they have a stupid name for it?
Cause Resurgence.
The Cause Resurgence rundown. You literally run around a pole for all day, every day, for months and months and months until you really, you achieve.
And you pay money to do that.
Yeah, well, if you're not, well, I didn't have to pay money for it because I was in the C organization, but they somehow are getting people to pay money for this down in Clearwater. They're paying them tens of thousands of dollars to run around a pole.
Well, what's so bizarre about the running program is the only instruction you ever get is keep running.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what you're told. Keep running. The way out is the way through. Just keep running.
Yeah.
And you can do the thing like as many times as you want. It's crazy. Like this thing supposedly restores your abilities as a Thetan and turns you into this incredibly powerful, causative, resurged individual. And yet, once you're done, you can come back and do it again. And they'll say, I'm incredibly causative now. And then do it a third time and say, now I really am incredibly causative. I mean, it's such a joke.
It's weird. The only thing that I ever found very interesting about the Cause Resurgence Rundown is that the base was piloted there for years and years and years, for maybe decades before it was actually released in Florida. But the Sea Org members were the only ones who had ever done it. And they did a study of all the people who had escaped from the property at one point. And like 98% of them had done the running program. And I was like, well, yeah, you're getting us in shape to run right the hell out of here. Because I've done it as well. So I thought, yeah, I mean, that we're keeping up the tradition here. But I will admit I was very, very fit after running around a pole in the middle of the desert for 2 months, and also very tan. But yeah, it is definitely a weird thing. And it was another one of those things that was, it was never, it didn't have proper policies or L. Ron Hubbard
references.
It was just this weird thing that was written. Do you know who that was written by?
Yeah.
Was it written by LRH?
Yeah, it was.
It just wasn't an issue.
It was just a dispatch.
Yeah, it was just like a carbon copy of a letter or something, and you're reading it, and you're like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that was right. The running program was right next to the David Beckham, like bunny rabbit trap that they left for him in the middle of the soccer pitch and the football pitch. I could just see like they put a cage in there with like a carrot in the middle. Like, come on.
A big net over the top.
Come on, David. Come on. Look, we got a soccer pitch over there. Look, there's a football in the soccer pitch that you can go and get too.
Right. Okay. And this then brought me to another interesting topic with respect to this, which is, if you think it is bizarre to spend tens, maybe more than tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars, Mike.
Yeah, I'm just not really, I don't have much information about how much those things cost, but
it's a lot.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay. It's like a company that you don't just hire anybody. You hire the company that
right.
does that to come and put it in.
Right. But if you think it's strange that tens of thousands of or hundreds of thousands of tax-free dollars are being used to build a soccer pitch to try and bunny trap David Beckham, you don't know the half of the shit that goes on. Because if there is one person where money is no object in Scientology, it's David Miscavige. But there's actually a second person where money is no object, which is Tom Cruise. Providing it's something that David Miscavige is doing to seek to impress him. And in that vein, one of the people that worked for David Miscavige on these special projects that he would have done to butter up Tom Cruise was John Brusseau. And John Brusseau, JB, otherwise known to everybody as JB, escaped in 2009 or 2009, I think it was, 2010 maybe. Anyway, and had a lot.
We talked about that in the last video. That was John Brusseau. The FBI is the one who set up John Brusseau to come stay with us in Burbank. And when he left, he had I want to say thousands of photos of all the stuff he had been working on for Dave and Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And I have a bit of a treat here because I'm going to show you some of these and explain a bit, because some of this stuff is so over the top. And the first three photos are probably the best of the lot. So I'm going to start out with them.
Okay.
Okay. David Miscavige had a van that he had decked out for him. It was this black van. Ron Miscavige Sr. talks about it. It had what's that bulletproof stuff in the that you wear? Kevlar.
Kevlar.
It had Kevlar lining all the walls, and it had TVs and special seats and stereo system, and like it was decked out. Bulletproof glass windows.
It was so heavy between the Kevlar and the bulletproof windows and all that stuff that they had to redo the entire chassis and suspension and drive. All the stuff that needed to stop and make it move had to be beefed up to like school bus size because it was so, so heavy.
Right. Okay. But that was done. And then Tom was going to get a Ford Expedition, like a big, big, you know, SUV. And so it was set up that this was going to be done under the direction of JB at Galt.
Because he had done the DW, the name of that van was DWFM, was the license plate of that van, which don't F with me. And so he had just finished that. So then he was like, oh, I got the guy that can make these for you.
Yeah, exactly, which is how most of these things went down. Like, okay, I'm going to show you some of this, and then we'll tell you some other things that happened. Yeah. Okay, so this doesn't look much like anything to do with a Ford Expedition. That is a burl root. That is a root of a tree that burl wood comes from. And this was purchased in order to make the trim for this Ford Expedition for Tom Cruise. This lump of tree root was converted into pieces of trim that are solid burl.
It's one piece.
One piece of solid burl that was used throughout the interior of this SUV.
And they made not only was it like the shelves and this counter and stuff like that, but even like the consoles where there were buttons and stuff, you can see it on the back of the bench there.
Right.
They made this like a custom countertop out of that big thing that you saw on the tractor there.
Okay.
You're talking about hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of Sea Org members spending their time at Golden Era Productions, that the guys that would be making sets or making props or whatever, doing Sea Org stuff, were making this stuff custom for Tom Cruise for free.
Right. And here we go. Here is how it looked when that piece was installed, or those pieces were installed. This is actually Tom Cruise's throne in the back of the expedition. And you can see
was an excursion, by the way. Excursion is the bigger one. Expedition is the smaller one.
Oh, I thought, oh, yeah, it is the biggest one. The biggest Ford SUV that you could buy. Yeah. My mistake. You're the Ford man.
I am. And also, now we all know the secret's out, guys. Tom Cruise likes dentine fire, that really spicy cinnamon gum. And it looks like Bubbalicious is the other one in there. So he's a big Bubbalicious. And I don't know about those glasses, though. Those glasses look pretty funky. I'm not sure what's going on with those. Those look like some seriously big glasses.
They do. But he's got like a mouse and a CB radio. Isn't that a CB radio, Mark? Or is that just a control for all of the audio?
I think one of them might be a DVD player, and I think the other one might be a nut. It looks like just two different head units. I'm not sure. This was a long time ago, so they didn't have the fancy stuff we have now. But look at all the controls, the shade controls, the window controls, all that stuff. And I still can't get over, like, this is like, for people who don't understand, John Brousseau is like an expert craftsman. Like, the fact that he could envision this and then make it out of that giant piece of wood, it's insane. It's thousands of hours of work to make all this look like this.
I know.
A lot of the guys that would work on this stuff with John Brousseau were people that worked for me when I was the pre-production director in the cinematography department. But we had a guy named Ron Somerville, a sets guy, another sets guy named Adam Lewis, a props guy, a German, I think he was Swiss German. I can't remember exactly. His name was Walter Wilkins. He was a mad scientist of prop expertise, and he could make the most detail down to the most detailed things, up to, you know, really cool flags or, you know, banners or whatever. But the sets and props crew, I want to say, for off and on, were like a little Tom Cruise SWAT team. If something was needed, like one time they just disappeared to his hangar in Los Angeles. I can't remember if it was Van Nuys or if it was Burbank. I think
Santa Monica
Airport.
Yeah.
And he had a hangar there with a whole bunch of planes that he would keep. And they ended up going down there and decking out that whole hangar with these big giant flag banners.
Yep. Here we go.
Yeah, there you go. So the Sea Org members at Golden Air Productions made those, I don't know what you want to call them. They're either kind of like banners or...
Yeah, signs. I mean, those guys are the same guys that made the signage for the Ideal Orgs. Like, this stuff looks like the signs you see in the Ideal Orgs. But they didn't just do that. Models. Kiss Me, Kate. That's the name of this plane. I think it's a P-51 that Tom Cruise owns.
Yeah, they made a miniature of it.
And John Brousseau made that model to put inside the hangar. But they also built and oversaw the construction of his motorhome that was actually built in Portland or somewhere in Oregon. And Yvonne, what's her name, was there and back constantly supervising the production of the motorhome for Tom. JB custom built this motorcycle, or painted this motorcycle. Just in addition to this stuff, all of the stuff that were hired for Tom Cruise's household and his Odin Productions, his production company, were all hired, vetted, approved, and installed by RTC.
You know, there's a whole bunch of spy files about Odin Productions.
Yeah,
When that DVD got leaked, they thought somebody at Odin Productions might have leaked that DVD. The Tom Cruise birthday event, because they had given them like 6 copies and they could only find 5. So it was like, it was a big RTC investigation.
Steve Marlowe and Luigi would go, if Tom Cruise bought a new house, when he bought a home in Pacific Palisades and then one in Beverly Hills and then in Telluride, they would be dispatched out there to install all the AV equipment in the home. Yeah, the TVs, the speakers, the movie room.
And they would get all the same stuff that Dave had. And sometimes we would use stuff from the base, would go into these studios, some of the equipment that we had at Golden Era. And, you know, that's true. There's actually an article, I think it was in Rolling Stone, about how we made the audio recording rig for Far and Away. When he shot that with Nicole, they had this whole portable sound rig called the Clear Sound Rig, which is L. Ron Hubbard's technology on how to restore all of his horrible recordings that he did. And Tom Cruise had a Clear Sound Rig that he would record his own dialogue on his movies. And I think that lasted for like 1 or 2 movies until the Hollywood industry audio people were like, we ain't using that no more. We're going to use what we always use. We ain't using your piece of junk Scientology audio setup. And then that's ended up what we ended up getting it back at the Ent base. And we had to take all the Tom Cruise labels off all the equipment and so that we could use it and just go on and use it ourselves to go on location and shoot audio.
Right. It wasn't just David Beckham and Tom Cruise. Will Smith also got the treatment.
Oh, there, I didn't
Christy,
know that.
Christy was has a story about her time in South Africa.
Yeah.
Will and Jada were flown to South Africa to see Education Alive at work in South Africa.
Before they opened the school?
I'm not sure which year it was. I guess it was probably before they opened the school, but as a sort of a pitch. And there was this whole thing set up. They were lined up for a safari and all these presentations and these parties and dinners and blah, blah, blah. Rita Weinberg was flown down there to host them. A whole bunch, like an advance team was sent to set everything up to make sure it was all perfect. Everybody in the org was like, oh, and by the way, when I was talking to Christy about this, she said they got an order in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
That if anybody ever saw Tom Cruise, they were to refer to him as Mr. Cruise.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise never went to Africa. This was permeated throughout the entirety
just in of case.
This Scientology world. Just in case.
Just in case Tom Cruise accidentally shows up. You better call him Mr. Cruise. I mean, well, we did have that at the Imp base. He was going around the Imp base, and this was in the, I want to say this was in the early 90s when he was going around the Imp base and getting a tour, and just, he was kind of just let loose on the property. He could do where he could go wherever he wanted. And he went into somebody's office, and the guy, his name was Tony Cifarelli. So we called him TC. He was referred to as TC. And he went up to Tom and said, "Hey, Tom." And he said something like, my initials are TC too. Anyway, the next muster that we all had, Larice, Dave's, whatever, what was his communicator or his assistant type person? She came to Gold Muster.
COB Comm,
and said, if anybody on this property runs into Mr. Cruise, you call him Mr. Cruise or sir. You do not call him Tom. You don't call him TC. You don't call him Tommy Boy, you know, like whatever. And everybody was like, wow, something must have happened. And then right after we went back to work, we're like, yeah, it was Tony. Tony. It was Tony. Tony fucked it up for everybody.
Yeah. Well, the great efforts made with these people all came to zilch. You know, Will Smith was probably the closest that anybody came to accomplishing anything. And that wasn't really, he never really would come out and say, I'm a Scientologist.
No.
He would only say,
well, they never did.
I use L. Ron Hubbard's study technology in my school because we found it works or something.
Yeah, but then at the same time, they're like, we're fans of, I mean, Jada's the best. She's like, we're fans of many parts of many religions. Like, we just take what we like from whichever one we like. And
and many parts of many men.
Yeah.
Apparently.
She's a man eater. I think that Hall & Oates song was written a little too early.
Yeah, in any event, and the world's greatest disseminator, Mr. Tom Cruise, has been an utter failure. And you know, it's one of these, the emperor has no clothes things in Scientology. Nobody ever says anything about this. Nobody ever dares breathe a word.
And 50% of his pre-clears are SPs as well. So he's got a bad... he's got a bad Scientology record. He audited two people in the Sea Org. One of them is an SP. The other one's not.
That would be you.
That would be me, yeah. So he's not a good Scientologist, people. He's a bad one.
So we go back to the Tom is what was the word that they used? I got rid of that thing now. Tom was upset about the rejection of David Beckham. Like, what?
It's ridiculous.
It was, but the Cruise Insider insists it's clear Tom was hurt by the rejection.
Yeah, Tom was not. I think Tom was hurt that he didn't get into Scientology. He wasn't trying. That's the weird thing about this is they don't, I don't think, Tom Cruise is going to hang out with you when you're Tom Cruise's best friend. He's a workaholic. He's doing his thing. Yeah. And if he's nearby, yeah, you might hang out for a little bit. If you're real lucky, you'll get invited over for a good old game of hide and go seekage. But like Leah was. Didn't she say that in her book? She went over to the house to play hide and go seek.
Yep.
And he was all mad because his hot cocoa wasn't made exactly. It was like
exactly, I mean, something like that.
I'm telling you.
It's a bizarre story.
It does. It sound like when she said he plays hide and go seek, like I'm up for all kinds of nonsense, you know, with the kids and stuff like that. But you ain't gonna catch me playing no hide and go seek. First of all, I'm pretty big. It's gonna be hard for me to hide. But
right.
But that just sounds like really weird to me that you got Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes running around playing hide and go seek somewhere in Beverly Hills. Like, that just sounds really, really bizarre.
Right. Yep. Okay. So let's
think. Tom Cruise wasn't going to be friends with David Beckham. Tom Cruise was trying to get David Beckham and the other spice one in the spicy one into Scientology.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So let's take a few questions. We're going to keep this one short tonight. We are going to shoot for an hour.
Ooh, 7 minutes. It's a marathon.
Okay. Japan of Green Gables. Love that name. Question, Mike, why didn't you and David Miscavige have to change your names when you went over the rainbow to gold base like Marty, Matt, and Jackson did? Well,
that's a good point.
It is a really good question. That primarily happened at La Quinta, and I was at La Quinta. And when I was at La Quinta, if I went outside the property, I had to use, I can't even remember what I had, John, because that's my middle name.
Oh.
But it didn't ever stick. Okay. And there was a bunch of people who their names didn't stick.
Yeah, used to be called Max for a while, and that didn't stick. And only on the radio, people called me Max.
Right. And I'm sure Miscavige had an outside the property name there too, but it didn't stick. So okay. I don't know. Some people it did. Jackson, Matt, Marty, yeah, all those. Leroy.
JB.
Well, JB was still always JB.
I didn't know his real name for many years. When somebody called him John, I was like, who's John? They're like, JB's John, you dumbo. I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know.
John. It's Jean. Actually J-E-A-N, I think.
That's right. It's Jean. Jean Brousseau.
He's a French Canuck.
Canadian.
Yes. Okay. Calico 26. Wasn't the Madrid opening the last public appearance of Shelley? Shelley knows Tom, and Tom acts like she doesn't exist. Well, no, it was not the last public appearance of Shelley. No, I mean, she was at numerous IAS events after that.
She was at the IAS event. She was in New York. I think there was a New Year's event right after that. It wasn't the last time. Maybe the last time in Europe.
Yeah. Are there any Scientology orgs in Alabama? Doubt it. Roll Tide, y'all. Yep. No Scientology orgs in Alabama. DP never in. Do you think TC displays his COS medal next to his Oscar? Oh, wait. He's never won an Oscar.
You know what? That's but the women he's been with, they've not only gotten kids, they've not only had kids, but they've also won Oscars after they leave Tom Cruise. Just a coincidence. I'm just saying it just happens.
It is a coincidence. Yes. SV John 26 question. Does TC know he was exposed to blue asbestos on the Freewinds? No idea.
No, I don't think anybody does.
I don't think anybody really understands anything about that because it's not what Scientology wants anybody to know. Ah, Mrs. T. Rush got that pronunciation. Mm-hmm. Serious question. How many millions of dollars has Admiral Shortpants flushed down the toilet on useless projects that went nowhere?
Tens of millions. Maybe even hundreds.
Like,
you know, he lost $30 million before he even got started. His first big investment was $30 million. Was it Oklahoma oil wells?
Oklahoma oil wells.
Oklahoma
oil
wells.
That was Elron Hubbard's money.
Well, that's true. That was the old man's money. And I would say it would be in the hunt. I would say if David Miscavige has just purely wasted money, it's at least in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, you know, just the Scientology Media Productions boondoggle is huge amounts of money for a thing that was completely unnecessary and duplicative of everything that already existed at Gold.
Yeah.
And paying DirecTV to keep Scientology TV on the air, I don't know how much that is costing, but it must be a huge amount of money every year, because they're not keeping that shit show on DirecTV without making money. And there's no ads.
Yeah. So well, that I means think they just pay. They just
Scientology is just outright. Paying.
Yeah.
They are paying whatever the general ad revenue would be for a channel to appear on DirecTV. It's
that doesn't have any return on investment. That's zero.
Nothing.
I bet you they don't even get anyone into Scientology through that channel, like that actually comes in and does a course. And even if they did get somebody come in and they did a $5 course, that's not paying for $1 million channel fee from DirecTV.
Right.
Okay.
Salty Beach Girl, Laurie. Mark, that video I emailed you of the guy walking along the base, is it normal for them to put the blinds down and hide? Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's
absolutely. That's
the
drill. If there
is a protester on the highway, everyone gets a call, or it goes out on the pagers or beepers or however they spread the word at whatever year period it is. They say, close the blinds and stay inside. And everyone has to stay inside with the blinds closed until you get the call. Okay, it's okay to go back out again.
Correct.
Mrs. T again.
Yep. P.S. How can I volunteer for the Aftermath Foundation? I contacted you guys years ago, but never got a response. Okay. If you filled out the form on the Aftermath Foundation website where it says volunteer, we now have your name. And if there is something that we need or a person needs, we have you in our directory of people to contact. But there isn't always someone in your area or something that needs to be done in your area. So, you know, if you haven't heard from us, it's just because we didn't have anything for you to do at the moment. But don't think that that moment may not come sometime in the future.
Yeah. If you emailed us or if you signed up, you're on a database that we have. And if we need you, we'll call on you. And we are getting sending emails to the people that are in our list now so that we can kind of verify and keep the list updated. So we're getting better with that. We just had way more reaches than we expected and way more emails and messages than we could easily handle when we first started out years ago.
Right. Mean Mr. Mustard. Sleeps in the... I was talking to Christy about this today. Yeah. You know the words to every Depeche Mode song? I know the words to every Beatles song.
I believe it.
I don't think Tom needs the help with money. What a crazy world COS is. Glad you all got out. Oh, no, he does not need help.
No, it's ridiculous that he, out of everyone in the world, he's the guy that the Sea Org are doing free stuff for.
This is being done to stroke his ego and... It you know, Leah has talked about this a number of times on various shows and podcasts and whatever that we have done, that the level of treatment, I don't know what the right word is, butt kissing, ass licking, whatever that happens with Tom Cruise is beyond anything that anybody could possibly imagine could be experienced. It's like beyond the, you know, the king of a country or a Saudi prince or something. It's beyond the, you know, the biggest music like Taylor Swift, and they don't get the sort of stuff that Tom Cruise gets showered upon him. And yeah. It's not the money, it is the power. It is the snap of the fingers, like this will be provided to me magically, like I have a magic lantern that I can just rub. And yeah. If he rubs Dave the right way and says, I need a this or a that, or I was thinking about doing X, Y, and Z, or I was thinking about getting a new motorcycle or whatever, don't worry, I've got you.
Yeah. Any chance David Miscavige can show off for Tom Cruise, he's going to show off, and it's going to be the biggest show off. Like, no one's going to outdo him. It's going to be the biggest show off that anyone's ever seen.
Yep. Jean Marie Pollock. Does Tom Cruise have to study Scientology every day, or is he getting all the benefit without the pain? He's getting all the benefit without the pain.
What's funny is I read that and I thought that, did he have to pay? Did he even have to pay? How does that work?
In theory, yes. But Matt talks about what happened when he was the Treasury Sec, FSO.
Yeah.
And being forced to give free services to everybody, and him writing up and saying, hey, I'm the Treasury Sec. The Hubbard policy says free service, free fall. I ain't doing it. And he got smashed.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Who knows?
I didn't even think about that.
Belinda String. What a douchebag TC is for using the Seahawk for his free labor. I'm sure he didn't pay any bonus extra to these people. Oh, no. No. Definitely not. Jane Ash, question. If TC's staff is all C of S, are they Seahawk? Does he pay them, or does the SO? If the church is paying tax-free dollars to give him slave labor, that's another thing for the IRS. Okay. His staff are not necessarily all Scientologists.
Yeah, they're just vetted. The
majority of them are in his household. In his production company, they are not. But they are screened by RTC still. They get background checks done on them. They have PIs investigate them. They do all sorts of stuff to make sure that they're okay.
Yeah.
There's Seahawk members that are assigned as sort of the, quote, liaison people who are the handlers. For a while, Jessica Davis, whatever her name was, Jessica, was Katie's handler. And she was a Seahawk, and she was with Katie 24/7 to make sure that every need of Katie was taken care of. Well, that was when they were trying to schmooze her into being a Scientologist.
Yeah.
And
Tommy Davis was Tom Cruise's sort of handler for a little bit too.
Right. And so there are Seahawk members who are assigned to spy on and oversee them. There are Scientologists, usually the sort of principal people in the Odin Productions are Scientologists who are monitored by those people in RTC. I mean, the two, for many years, Michael Dovin and his wife were the main people in Tom Cruise's life, and they reported directly to David Miscavige about everything that was going on.
Yeah, that whole time period from the early 90s, like 1990, 91, all the way up till when he divorced Nicole, they were installed. Michael Dovin and Andrea Dovin were installed in TC's camp, and they were reporting up to Dave as much as they could report up that entire time. While Tom and I doubt that Tom or Nicole knew any of that was going
on. Yeah, maybe.
I remember them coming to the property and getting sec checked and getting ethics handlings at the base, Andrea and Michael, because they weren't giving enough info. They weren't giving us all the goods, you know?
Right. Mrs. T again, I'm an accountant. Your answer hurts me.
Ugh.
Yeah, it does. Ivana Tinkle.
Oh, you better get to that.
Ivana Tinkle. What's crazy is that Scientology has a pro soccer pitch, but the LA Galaxy had a sloppy second field from the football team. Embarrassing. Yeah, it's true. They've got a nice stadium now, though.
Yeah, they sure do, right?
Yep. Trixie out. Does Dave Miscavige really believe all the Scientology stuff, or does he know it's all bullshit? I don't know. We get asked this question often, and I always answer it basically the same way. I don't know that it matters one way or the other. He says he believes it. So is that really different than anybody believing it or not? I don't know.
The only thing that I would say is that he doesn't play by L. Ron Hubbard's rules all the time. He kind of goes a little free with how he does it. So I tend to believe. He plays along like he believes it, so everybody else will. But he knows it's his show now, and he doesn't have to do anything. He could literally say whatever he wants. He could say, Hubbard left me a secret document. No one's going to challenge him to say the document's not a secret document. Nobody knows.
Right. Exactly. What does DM get from TC? Why the love bombing? Oh, access. Access to the most important people in Hollywood, access to Tony Blair's government in the UK, access to
Bill Clinton,
access to
Oprah.
Yeah, all sorts of people. And that is enormously important to him.
I have to tell you this story. This will give you a very good idea of David Miscavige. When he went to the birthday party, I think it was Oprah was throwing a birthday party for Missy Elliott, and John Travolta was there, and Oprah, and you know, all these people, and Bill Clinton was there. And when he came back from the party, someone said, "Sir," and David Miscavige is the one who told us this story. He says, I walk into the HGB and somebody says, "Sir, is it true you met Bill Clinton?" And Dave Miscavige goes, "No, Bill Clinton met me." That's David Miscavige.
He has a very inflated sense of his importance.
Yeah, this is the last one, Ivana Tinkle.
Okay, Ivana Tinkle, conspiracy time. Do you think Scientology was also trying to break up Victoria and David like what happened with Tom and Nicole? No. I do not. In fact, I think that Scientology and David Miscavige were desperate to get them both.
Yeah, they needed the package.
If you watch the Netflix documentary, you will see that at the time, Posh Spice was like the biggest thing. She was the Taylor Swift. The Spice Girls were the Taylor Swift of their time. And combined, David and Victoria were... There is nothing that is like that now. I mean, I guess Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are sort of in that same league now.
Yeah.
But Travis Kelce is not as big a deal as David Beckham was.
Yeah, it would have been
Taylor
like
Taylor Swift is.
Yeah, it would have been like Jay-Z and Beyonce if they could have got Jay-Z and Beyonce. It would have been exactly. Like, there's no way you're going to do better than that. That's right. Like, we're good. We're good.
So they wanted them both. And yeah,
they need somebody new, because when Tom bails or when this whole thing falls apart, they got nobody. Michael Pena and Jenna Elfman are not going to be able to keep this thing going.
Elizabeth Moss.
And Elizabeth Moss. That's right. I forgot about her. And what's her name? Michelle Stafford. You know, we never talk about Michelle Stafford. We got to do a thing because she gets to fly below the radar. Nobody's calling her out. She's got a really good agent or good PR people. They're keeping her flying below the radar on the Scientology craziness, even though she may have been in longer than any of these people.
Yeah, but she's not like a household name.
Well, she's a soap opera star in the States.
Yeah, but nobody really knows who she is.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's all the questions we have. So
that is,
and we didn't get it to an hour, but we did pretty good. There was in the Spy Files. We have a Spy Files episode coming out on Thursday, and in that Spy Files episode, we're going to talk about a guy named Eric Geisler, affectionately known to many of you as Eric Spiesler. And Eric was a double agent working for the Office of Special Affairs as a spy, and he. We know that he continued to be a spy and an operative for the Office of Special Affairs because he eventually ended up doing some witness tampering in the Danny Masterson trial. And he was listed as a witness to be called in the trial. He was never called. They didn't need to call him because they pretty much already had what they needed. But we're going to do a Spy File. There's a Spy File video coming out, Scientology Spy Files video coming out on Thursday. And it is the original document that shows how he was activated as a spy for the Office of Special Affairs. And we're going to go into that document in detail.
Great. So. All righty. Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you all for watching. See you all next time.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for tuning in. You can find more episodes of Exposing Scientology both on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out my best-selling memoir, A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology. It's available on Amazon and as an audiobook. Until next time, be well and happy.